Hello and welcome to the 52nd episode of Woman, Conversations for the Curious, a podcast I created for women looking to squeeze more juice out of life. I'm Amy Crawford, founder of The Holistic Ingredient. I'm a mindset therapist, whole food lover, and more than a little bit passionate about helping you feel comfortable around what it is to be a woman. Today's episode is brought to you by my best-selling raw organic maca powder. A blend of red, yellow, and black maca, sustainably sourced from the mountains of Peru. Maca has been used traditionally to naturally balance hormones, boost mood, promote stamina, build libido, and foster greater energy. You can add this delicious multi-flavored powder to your muesli, porridge, smoothie, bliss balls, or hot choc. Available now via my website, theholisticingredient.com. This episode is guaranteed to resonate with many. I've had the pleasure of interviewing Georgie Collinson, a certified RTT hypnotherapist, anxiety mindset coach, inner voice facilitator, and bachelor degree qualified naturopath and nutritionist. Georgie has helped hundreds of clients worldwide master their anxious mind and is host of the chart-topping Anxiety Reset podcast. She's deeply committed to helping career-driven women step out of anxiety and fear using the Anxiety Reset method so they can thrive with confidence. Georgie's first book, The Anxiety Reset Method, is due for release on March 28th, 2023. At the time of interview, Georgie was situated in Bali, so please excuse some very minor sound glitches during our chat. Now, also note that this is the final podcast episode in this series. I'm taking a small break to focus on a new direction in the holistic ingredient offerings and will be returning in a matter of weeks to continue in the next season. As always, thank you so much for being here. So, Georgie, as a qualified naturopath and nutritionist, I'm eager to start by asking how you come to be specializing in the area of anxiety. There's a story, I'm sure. Yeah.
Of course. I think like most specialties, it comes from life experience and really wanting to help, you know, people who've been through a similar journey to me. And anxiety for me started out as just being a high achiever and wanting to be perfect, particularly in my academics at school, that kind of thing. But then when my parents divorced, when I was 19 years old, I had this real shock in my life. My whole support system was fractured. And for me, it was honestly such a shock that it sent me into this high functioning anxiety where I'd wake up every day kind of just feeling like something bad was going to happen and I needed to plan and prepare. And it manifested for a while in controlling my food, controlling what I was eating, and eventually just bleeds into every area of life where we just constantly feel like we're not doing enough, not achieving enough. And it's really a response to feeling like life's out of control and we need to control it. And so that's how it started for me, Amy. And it was a number of years of figuring out, I mean, starting as a naturopath and nutritionist, that all was fueled initially by, if I have the perfect diet, I'll have the perfect body, and then I'll have the perfect life, right? That was the logic that I sort of went through there until picking that apart and really understanding what was going on at the root of it. And so it's been learning about working with our subconscious mind, what's at the root of this anxiety and what it's really there to help us learn, that has been my life's work and my journey and what I now guide my clients through, and what's now available is my book.
Yes, so exciting. And I'm eager to hear more about your book, which will be available for listeners very soon. And we'll make sure that's linked in the show notes. It was interesting what you mentioned about that sort of need for control. And I think you'd probably agree that when we feel really stressed, and I know I'm very aware of doing this myself, but the more stressed I become, the more need for control I have in every area of my life. And I start becoming almost pedantic in my need to dot every I and cross every T. I get focused on the detail and you just sort of try and spin all these plates in the air, which just exacerbates the issue, doesn't it? And we just get more and more anxious and more frazzled and more exhausted.
100%. And I would say part of what happens there is, and it's perfectly a natural response. It's our instinct is when you're feeling stressed or anxious to try to get rid of that feeling. Like we don't want to feel it. And so we think if I just like really organize my day and my life, or if I do X, Y, Z, then I'm going to have that experience, that I'm going to have that control, or I'm going to feel better. When often what happens is that we tend to just increase that momentum of the anxiety, and it doesn't really help us in the long term. What really works is something that goes against our instincts, and that's actually tuning in to the feeling, asking ourselves the questions like, what is it that I actually need right now? And going from there.
Okay. I want to come back to that because that's a really important conversation, that one around sort of self-sabotage and buffering the discomfort. I think we should chat about. But what I might actually do is go back to, let's take anxiety back to its simplest terms, because I, as a therapist myself, I know that some of my clients can sometimes have trouble describing what it is they feel, and they may just be uncertain as to whether what they're experiencing is actually anxiety. So how would you define anxiety?
Well, I would define high functioning anxiety, because I think that's really my area that I love to work with. And there are some different flavors of anxiety. High functioning anxiety is the kind where general day-to-day activities and responsibilities are carried out. You tend to get the job done, get through life. And from the outside, people would think you've got it all together. People see someone who is in some ways performing well in various areas of life. But on the inside, it's a different experience. And so it might not look like what we think anxiety looks like, hyperventilating, panic attacks. It can, but usually it's a little more subtle, and it's more of that worry in mind, racing mind, self-doubt, going into those crippling self-doubt spirals. Women with high functioning anxiety often notice they can feel confident at times and then fall into these crashes of self-doubt too. On the physical side of the sensation, it could feel like a churning or a butterflies in the belly kind of feeling. It might look like a racing heartbeat. It could be sweaty palms. Or it could also be, and this is an interesting one that sort of overlaps the physical and the mental experience, is the mind blank. You just completely forget what you're saying, or you notice a situation is stressful and you can't focus at all, and you can't think, and you don't know what the answer is and what to say.
I've actually, if I could share, experienced anxiety and at times, and one of the best ways I've been able to describe it is this feeling like I've robbed a bank. Now, I want to just preface that comment by saying I've never actually robbed a bank, so I don't really know what that would feel like, but it is this sense that I've done something, or just it's a terribly disconcerting, fearful feeling, and sometimes you just cannot find the source of it.
Yes. Yeah. Because often it has no logical relevance to the moment that you're in right now, right? Like you haven't robbed a bank, and you can see that you have your four walls around you, you've got food in the fridge, you're okay, but something in your body just does not feel safe.
And would I be right, or would you agree that much of the anxiety that we experience today is a direct result of an experience or trauma that happened when we were children or beyond? That would be fair.
So fair, like 100,000,000%.
Yeah, I thought you'd say that. And having said that, each and every time that anxiety comes back, and it could be with us all day if it's quite generalized, or it could just come in fits and spurts, would I be right in saying as well that when we're feeling that anxiety, it's simply rearing its head to say, you need to go back and heal this, you need to heal that little girl, or you need to go and, you know, it's an opportunity to do some work. Would that be fair?
For sure. And I think there are facets to this. So because we can also get in a loop where we think we've never healed enough as well. I just want to speak to for a moment, because I've certainly been there too. Like, what is this? I need to heal this. I need to figure this out.
Georgie, thank you. That's a really valid point. Thank you for bringing this up.
Yeah, because Sometimes we do what we're actually needing is gentleness with ourselves in that moment, compassion and love. And that is still speaking to that inner child and speaking to that part of you that's afraid, but just bringing in that loving parent part of you too. So whenever we feel uncomfortable, any kind of big emotional response that doesn't make logical sense for the moment you're in, you know, you could have a conversation with a partner and all of a sudden they say something and it just creates this big explosion of emotion from you. And you can kind of see this, it's not like 100% adding up necessarily. Or later you reflect on it and you think, how did I blow up like that? Or how did I feel so completely shut down? I went into a freeze response. My whole body just froze in that moment. And this is where sometimes just bringing in some loving kindness to ourselves can help us navigate those moments. I mean, that's almost always really what we need. And then that can come with a whole lot of other things. So parenting ourselves also means, are you getting enough sleep? Like, have you eaten a meal today? Like, did you eat lunch? You know, there are some basic physical needs we have as well. And that's where my naturopath side comes in, Amy, is like looking at the physical body too, because there is so much we can work with on that level as well that then gives us the resilience. So we're less likely to be so triggered by all of these things that come up.
Yes, we definitely need to talk about the mind-body connection. That's a hot topic for this conversation particularly. Can I take you back to that important point you made about stopping or pausing to go within and ask ourselves what we might need in the moment or what is it that we're feeling in the moment? Because then obviously, as you've said, we need to make some steps to support us or soothe ourselves. But unfortunately, many of us get into a habit of buffering or self-sabotaging in some way. And sometimes the easiest way to soothe might be to have a glass of wine. Or, as I have done a lot of in the past, put a teaspoon in a crunchy jar of peanut butter, or watch 14 episodes of Netflix.
Yeah.
And all we're really doing there, aren't we, is buffering, and that discomfort is going to bubble up in some way, isn't it? So I think the pertinent question for you is, instead of doing that, instead of, I mean, obviously we are the ones that have to take responsibility and make the different choice, but what could we do in those moments to help break that cycle?
Yeah, and I will say too, I mean, emotional eating and supporting ourselves with food is such a common one that I see with women with high functioning anxiety, because the food was always there for us. Like, we don't have to bother anyone. It's like, it's just the friend that's always going to bring us comfort without us having to deal with any of our stuff. So I would say, before we reach for the food or buy something online or do the things that are distracting us from our feelings, it's really doing that uncomfortable work and saying, what is this about? What is this anxiety trying to tell me? Learning to befriend it as a helpful signal that is just letting you know that something is a little bit out of balance, or there's something that has, there's a need that isn't being met, that is being required of you. Now, a lot of the time, if we just get still with ourselves and the anxiety, what tends to happen quite commonly is that we actually just need to have a bit of a cry. And that might not take like 10 hours. That might actually just take 5 minutes or 10 minutes to just unleash a bit of emotion, because life's really hard and there's a lot of stuff coming at us all the time. And we rarely let ourselves feel completely safe to just be in our emotional experience and just fall to pieces a little bit.
Can I ask a question about that? Because I remember someone defining anxiety to me as, in its simplest form, unexpressed emotion, so repressed emotion. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely. So essentially, anxiety can build up. It's almost like a volcano filling with lava. All these emotions are kind of there, our grief, our sadness, our frustration, our anger. And that's all behind anxiety. If you can imagine that volcano is getting really full of lava and it's about to explode, it's going to shake and shudder a little bit, right? So that's the anxiety or the panic attack that can typically proceed or be happening, kind of when what we really need to do is look at those deeper emotions underneath. And gosh, we have so much grief, so much to grieve in our lives beyond bereavement, beyond actually losing a person that we love. There are so many other forms of grief, and we will all lose people that we love in our lives at some point. So there's that element to grief. But there's grief of your job. There's grief of the life that you had, maybe the life you had before you had children, or before you met your partner. Like there's so many different, or there's relationships to grieve and friendships to grieve, right? Like so much to grieve that we don't want to look at because we just, society tells us, keep calm and carry on, keep going.
And especially if you are certainly a lot of women in my generation who grew up being told just to keep calm and carry on, just to zip it and get over it and toughen up and just be nice and not to complain and all of those things. It can, you know, we weren't taught how to feel our emotions, many of us. So it can be a double whammy, but I think what can also be, can you hear me, Georgie?
Yes.
Oh, you can. You froze, sorry.
a little.
what I think you might agree can also be very challenging is whilst we are stopping to ask ourselves what it is that we need, a lot of the time it could just be a conversation. But a lot of women don't want to be a burden and they don't want to complain. And, you know, they might have this the idea in their minds that other people's needs are more important than theirs, or that, you know, why do I deserve to feel like this? Because look at all the challenges they're going through. And so they're not talking. And just talking about this and telling somebody what it is that you're feeling can be immensely impactful, can't it?
100%. And that's us being vulnerable, right? That's us expressing a piece of ourselves that is weak and sensitive. And there is so much bravery in that. Brené Brown talks about this, if anyone's familiar with her work, but she talks about how when we are showing those weaker sides of ourselves or our sensitivity, other people meet that with bravery. They think, oh, wow, like that's amazing. And to actually be received in that state where you are vulnerable is so healing because it's just the quickest antidote out of shame, out of all the shame that we hold in, all the things we don't say, all the things we're worried that are wrong with us.
Yeah. So what if somebody is feeling prickly anxiety in this moment? I often call it prickly because it feels a little bit that way to me. I feel prickly in my fingers and my body. But if somebody's experiencing it and they don't know where it's coming from, sometimes it can just be there and you've robbed the bank and you can't figure out where it's coming from. What can you do in those moments? What are some practical things you can do right then to sort of see if you can, well, snap out of it's probably not the right term, but to break the cycle or something?
Yes. And I'm glad you asked this. I do. There's two elements to this question. One is I'm not a huge fan of like the quick tips because always we do want to eventually do that deeper work and explore where this is coming from. So we don't have to constantly like put a Band-Aid over, you know, a bleeding wound, you know.
Absolutely.
But sometimes we need to get to a place where we're coping and we're thinking more clearly. And sometimes that self-analysis can just go take us even further in anxiety where we're like, what is it that I need? Or what healing do I need to do? So we need to get back into our bodies and we need to break through our mental analysis. And so a few ways we can do this, one that I really love and I get a lot of like, not sure about this one from people, but is a cold shower. It's completely free. You're having a shower anyway. Why not add that 30 seconds of cold into at the end of your shower, especially if you tend to wake up anxious and it's just like there, or in the evening, you can have your cold shower. It's a really powerful one. It triggers our vagus nerve. It turns on our rest and digest mode and it calms your whole body. It's this complete paradox, weird thing that you'd think it would shock you and make you more anxious.
I feel like I will say I've never been, I've grew up in Tasmania, so I can get into a freezing cold ocean, but I have great discomfort under the shower. And all I'm imagining is just holding my breath, you know, and just, but I'm going to trust you on that one and give it a go.
You have to keep breathing. So that's key, is like keep the breath going. And you do realize how capable you are of doing it. And also an ocean works perfectly well, Amy, if you want to do your ocean dip every day, that's totally fine. So cold water is like so beautiful in there for us. Another one that I love in the moment though is bringing, because we can't always jump in the shower. What if you're at work or what if you're in a conversation with someone? So just bringing your awareness down to your feet is a really powerful one. And this works too when you notice you're like welling up and you kind of want to cry, but you don't want to because you maybe you're in a business meeting or something's going on. So just bringing your awareness right down to your feet, focusing down there, noticing how your feet feel on the ground or in your shoes, what sensations are there, wiggling your toes, moving your feet around, and also imagining like all your energy, all your focus going right down to your feet, and it literally grounds you.
Okay.
So that's a powerful one too. And if you couple that, again, we don't always have the time, but with some barefoot walking on the grass or over a textured surface, that then again is just bringing awareness and mindfulness to your feet. Brilliant. It's just so far from the head. It kind of works like that.
Yeah, really good tips. And as you say, we don't always want to just turn to quick band-aid fixes, but I'm imagining, for example, someone having to go into a business meeting or getting on a podcast or, you know, whatever, just feeling like they're almost breathless and needing to do something to kind of connect with your body again. I'd like to suggest that EFT is a good one as well. So tapping. Is a great way to sort of instantly calm, and you can do that anywhere.
Absolutely. And my other favorite one is shaking, letting our body shake the anxiety out. And it's part of our trauma response. So if we see an animal in the wild, like a zebra, get chased by a lion and the zebra actually escapes that scary moment, it will start shaking. Its whole body starts shaking for a few minutes before then it just goes back to eating grass. And as human beings, we actually have the same impulse and the same desire to do that. We just shut it down because we're used to shutting all our emotions down, really. So it's noticing that your body has energy in it that needs to move, and then just letting that move. It could be jumping, it could be shaking your limbs. You could also work with, there are some particular exercises called TRE, trauma release exercises, that get your body and your limbs and your muscles shaking in certain positions. But these can be really powerful as well for us to shake off that anxiety. And if you're at work, yeah, I know it's not going to be like ideal, but you could maybe go into the bathroom and do that. Or if you work from a home office, you know, put on a song for 2 minutes and just get up, jump up, shake that stress out. It's so powerful for just resetting our nervous system and not letting that anxiety stay stored up in us.
Great idea. I often find that sometimes just grabbing Wilson is a really good antidote for me, and going for a walk. Not sorry, just grabbing Wilson. I'm going to hug you, mate. And he's like a little boy and he's like, stop, get off me. No, what I find is just walking. And I sort of go out with the commitment that I'm just going to notice, like try and get out of my head a little bit and just notice on my walk, what do I observe that is beautiful to my eye, or, you know, things to be grateful for, that sort of thing to sort of distract me. That can be quite useful too, if you can.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. It's just bringing you out of your limited little mind world that we can all get stuck in this little box, and going further and kind of noticing this big world around you can be really powerful.
And getting into and finding ways to control that thought spiral. Something happens and suddenly you're not feeling enough, and that spirals to the next thing of all the, you know, the disaster that's awaiting you, and that's the spirals from one thing to the next, doesn't it? So finding a way to control the snowball effect of our mind.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, one thing we can do if we do have a little bit more space and time, doesn't have to be a long amount of time, is notice that the anxiety's there, noticing that something's triggered you, and actually just letting yourself go into your body and feel into the origin of where that feeling's coming from. Where did this start? Where have I felt this before? This is an old feeling. And that's the inner child work we were speaking about at the start. And speaking to that version of you. Oh, hang on. So let's say, I'll just try and give this an example. Let's say you have had a situation at work and someone, or like with some kind of authority figure, and someone's kind of said something to you and put you on the spot, and you feel like you've got to have an answer and you don't know what to say and your mind's gone blank. When have you felt that before? And if we go back in time, maybe when you're a child, you were often pressured by your parents, just have the answer now. What's the answer? Come on, you're not being fast enough answering this. You never, you know. And these moments that can come from not abusive like situations, that can come from a perfectly like loving family and they're trying to do the best for you, which then maybe made you shut down as a child and think, I don't know what the answer is and I don't want to look stupid, so I just won't answer anything. And what that younger version of you needs to hear is that you are smart. You do know the answer. You just need some time, and you've got time, and I'm here to listen to you, and I'm here with you and take your time with this. So when we can sort of develop that skill as well, it can be really powerful.
So really, when, as you say, when you've got time, asking yourself that question, where has this, where could this have, may have this have come from, or what experience might I have had when I was a child that brought about this programmed response?
That's right. And then speaking to that version of you, because it's that little girl or that little boy in you that needs to hear the words that would have soothed her in that moment. So take your time. You've got time.
Beautiful.
And often, if we can then bring that into our moment, present moment now, we'll notice, oh, my brain just started working again. My body feels relaxed. I just needed to be told I've got time.
Yeah. So I imagine through the work that you do, Georgie, you would focus on sometimes going back and healing that little girl or that little boy. Would that be fair? That's something
yes,
that you,
yeah.
you do? Yeah.
That's a great majority of the work that I do with the hypnotherapy.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, we're cutting a bit. Keep going.
I was just going to say it's a really important part of the work, because sometimes what I just talked to you through, that process, can be tricky to do on your own and to have that awareness. And so having someone guide you through that process is amazing, for having these realizations that help you put things together and see, ah, that's why I think the way I think, that's why I do things the way I do them, and that's why I feel what I feel. And when we can figure out just what we needed in that moment when we were younger, and we upgrade that child, so we're upgrading into our adult self, it's like, okay, yes, when you were a little child, you felt like you needed to know the answers, but now you know better and you can tell yourself and give yourself time, because you're an adult and there's no one forcing you, and you can speak kindly to yourself. You can regulate your own nervous system. When you were a little child, you couldn't do that. You needed someone to do that for you. And so it's helping us to kind of get into this really empowered state. Everything that's happened to us or anything we've experienced, it all comes down to what did you make that mean? What's the story? Doesn't matter how horrible or how neutral it was. It's all about what we made it mean, and we can always get someone's power back.
Beautiful. So if a listener is listening, they can work with you one-on-one in this area, can't they? If they feel like they do need far greater support than they can perhaps provide for themselves at the moment.
Yeah, this is something I offer in a 4-month program. So we kind of go through, we've got a series of these deep dive sessions where we go in and we figure out what's going on, as well as looking at the holistic kind of approach and seeing our gut health, our nutrition, everything. Because one of the other elements that I describe with this, Amy, is yes, there are triggers that we have from our past, but we also do live in an anxiety-inducing environment, an anxiety-inducing world. You know, the headlines of the news are designed to trigger our fear response, right? Because that gets our attention. It keeps us glued, and it's everything is about captivating attention, social media too. And so we have a lot of stressful stimuli too, and it's coming at us all the time. Stressful relationships, work deadlines, so much. And everyone wants it done yesterday, and you usually want you to have done stuff yesterday too. And it doesn't help when we haven't slept. And it doesn't help if we've got a overgrowth of our bacteria in our small intestine, like SIBO, or some kind of imbalance that's impacting anxiety on that level. It doesn't help when we haven't eaten and aren't taking care of our blood sugar levels, or we're pumping ourselves full of caffeine. So it all works beautifully together. Like, you can't just do one piece. And that's what I'm so passionate about, is like really tying everything together so that we're just leaving no stone unturned when it comes to working with anxiety. Otherwise, what happens is people end up trying one way. Like, they're like, oh, I did the gut healing thing and my anxiety is still the same. Well, but did you do the inner child work? And did you also look at how frequently you're eating and your nutrients, right? So there's so much that kind of needs to go into it for us to see those results.
So wonderful to have somebody like you to work them through that, take them through that journey, given all the different elements of your role. I do remember I have strangely found some kind of comfort in some anxiety that I've experienced in my life that seemed to be concurrent with some poor gut health. And so sometimes when I know my gut health isn't good for other symptoms that I'm acutely aware of, I can feel really anxious. And there's comfort in that for me in a strange way. It's okay, everything's all right. We're just going to focus on your gut health because sometimes that's actually all it is.
Yes. And I would say a very ex similar thing with understanding our hormones and what's going on there. So particularly if you're moving through a hormonal transition in your life, going through transitions like perimenopause and menopause, your body is literally recalibrating on so many levels, and those hormonal fluctuations are quite stressful for your body and can induce anxiety. That can be part of it, especially if we have low progesterone levels, which is a huge part of the anxiety piece there. And just knowing that can be so liberating. It's like it's liberating to know, oh, I'm due for my period, and that's why I'm feeling more anxious today. Oh, that's why I felt so anxious yesterday, right? It's like, that's not me. It's what my hormones are doing. And we do, once we know that information, we can be kinder to ourselves, and we can also take practical action, which don't we love to be able to do? We can do something about it.
Yeah, that's right. So, would you, a couple of things, would you agree that anxiety is becoming increasingly prevalent in our society?
It's an interesting question because, I mean, when I think about this zoomed out, I would say, I mean, gosh, like we used to have to worry about whether we were going to get food today, or, whether there was going to be like, if I got some shelter, or is a, I don't know, bacteria going to come upon my body and kill me? I don't know. So there are so many ways that we've advanced in terms of our literal survival, but certainly what statistics are showing us on the other level of, since we've been recording statistics, is that there is more anxiety and that it is becoming more prevalent. And I would say, looking at our world, it's only getting faster and faster, speeding up. We know that everything I mentioned earlier is designed to captivate our attention, in terms of our screens, our phones, so that we'll buy more things. And social media companies literally exploit and hack our psychology and our weaknesses in our psychology, and then make us feel like we're the bad ones for it. Oh, I have no discipline with my phone, or I'm the one that's like, it's not all on you either. There are very deliberate ways that our attention is being zapped from us and making it harder for us to just have space in our minds, making it harder for us to just let our, we have a very potent need for time to just let our thoughts wander, and going for a walk, like you said, with your dog is a beautiful way to do that for yourself. And also doing it, can we do that without the stimuli of listening to a podcast or an audiobook on the way? Can we just fully switch off? Most of us really struggle to do that. And that was something that we had more space for in our lives 100 years ago, 50
It's
years ago.
interesting you say that actually, because I used to be a very, very, very keen, this is all a bit contradictory really, but I was a very keen podcaster in terms of a listener for some time. And what, as someone who is in the earlier stages of perimenopause and recognizing how differently I'm feeling in my body, in my mind and my nervous system, also having a little bit perhaps too much on my plate at work, I find that I haven't got the capacity to listen to anything when I walk. It all feels too busy and there's too much stimulus.
Yeah.
It's just this, I just want to go and I just want to breathe. I just want to, and just let my thoughts go and just ponder and not feel pressured to have to get to the end of a podcast episode or, and often what I find, dare I say, when I listen to lots of some, amazing podcasts, but it switches me on a lot
Yeah.
too. Oh, that would be a great thing to talk about when I go back to my desk.
Exactly. Yeah.
But
And
it's
so,
finding what's right for you, isn't it, really?
and how great that you listen to that need in you for space instead of possibly another voice that could say, oh, but you could use this time really productively right now.
Oh, don't worry. I tell you what, it's taken me a while to get to that point because, I have always worked, probably erred on the side of workaholism. And so, yeah, every moment in the day is an opportunity to learn something or put something else into practice. And it's taken a long time for me to get to this point of recognizing, you know what? letting go of that story that, you know, but everybody else is listening and reading, and, you know, online people are saying they're reading a book a week and they're listening to a podcast every day, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm trying to catch up with all these productive people and I'm falling behind and I'm going to be outdated soon if I don't, you know. It's just incredible, isn't it, the stories we can tell ourselves and the pressure.
Anxiety, trying to keep up with more high-functioning anxiety, and we just scratch up for each other. And that's what I'm saying, like this world that we live in, we just amplify anxiety and it's so normal. So when I speak to people, Amy, and I describe high functioning anxiety, so many people say, oh, that's me, or I need you. And I'm like, yeah, no duh. Like the world is kind of impacted by this in so many ways. And I'm not saying everyone has anxiety, but it is so common and very normalized. That this is normal. When what is normal is, or should be normal, is slowing down, prioritizing rest, celebrating someone who has decided to just like give themselves an entire day to just be. Oh, what an amazing thing to do. What a rebellious act in this day and age.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I have to give myself a stern talking to when I go into a weekend with all these plans of weeding the garden and getting the washing done and getting the dusting done and all these things, and I think, oh, I might just go lie down and read a book for an hour and a half or 2 hours. And then, you know, sometimes a thought will pop in, oh, come on, you've got things to do. But even when I'm lying there and I say to myself, what a luxury. I mean, even that in itself is ridiculous, isn't it? It's not a luxury. Rest is a necessity.
Yes.
It's not a luxury, it's what you need.
It's charging, it's the same as plugging your phone into a charger. Like your battery will die eventually if you don't let yourself rest properly and give yourself that. It's just like nourishment and food, which also ironically we seem to just think we don't need as much of, or like, you know, oh, I forgot to eat lunch, how great is that, like less calories today, instead of thinking about how that is going to impact your nervous system, your energy levels, your quality of life, all so many facets. So it all matters, and we have to take care of ourselves and make that something that is celebrated when someone does that. I mean, gosh, 2 hours reading a book on a weekend is a beautiful achievement. Well done.
Of course.
I wish we would say it more that way. And the mind will always tell you there's more to do. That's how our minds work. So it's about noticing this is the thing my mind does. It always tells me I haven't done enough and that I've got more to do. So what am I going to do with that? I'm going to be kind to myself and tell myself, like, I don't need to listen to that today, and I actually really need to rest.
I think we need to get a lot better at actually stopping, pausing, and asking ourselves very honestly, what do I need in this moment? What do I most need in this moment, and giving ourselves that, you know, or asking what would give me the most joy in this moment or with this half day I have in front of me? What would make me feel nourished and wonderful? I don't think we ask ourselves those simple questions enough.
Or what can I do? What would actually give me some fun, you know, and what do you do for fun? I remember a time in my life where I couldn't answer that question. I was like, fun? I had no space in my mind for fun.
Yeah, like play, what's that?
Yeah.
Play, yeah. What do you mean?
What's the point of that? That doesn't help me survive. That's how we know we're in survival mode, when we have no space for play and fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've recently committed to booking lots of tickets to dance gigs and great like 90s house doof doofs, because nothing makes me feel better in my body than dancing. And I've had years without doing that, and only recently started getting back into it. And the feeling of feet in grass and going nuts to some classic hard house, it doesn't get any better than that for me. I'm like, why the hell wouldn't I keep doing this stuff? Shaking it out of your body, and it just feels so good. So why don't we do more of what feels so good?
And why do we stop dancing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I remember
when
I
stop dancing and get to where we stop.
I lost you then. I remember when I lived in London going to Glastonbury Music Festival for a few years, and it was just incredible. It was just some of the best times of my life. And I'd look on to these people that, you know, I was probably 20s, late 20s, and I'd look on at people that are now about my age, these midlifers, thinking, oh, wow, I hope I'm that cool when I'm their age, you know. And it is, even now, if I go to a music festival and see people years older than me just dancing and having a great time, it doesn't need to stop.
Exactly.
But we tell ourselves stories that perhaps it might, or we just get a bit too caught up in our busy and our day-to-day.
Which is a whole other like collective story that we need to rewrite. So there's like the whole thing about not having enough time and rushing, but also aging and what that means, and that like certain activities are only available to a certain age group. You know, it's like fun is for everyone.
That's right. Yeah. So Georgie, a question I was wondering about, there's a couple of things. Firstly, is anxiety an issue that is quite likely to exacerbate if we don't do something about it, if we don't actively choose? Is it just quite likely that it will continue to feel worse for us?
Well, that's an interesting question. Usually, yes, because more stuff is going to happen in your life that's going to stress you. The next big shock or need to grieve, for example, will come up, like something that you lose. And if we don't deal with the grief and we just push on, we will continue to store up more and more in that volcano until it explodes, until it erupts, right? So, yeah. It doesn't get better.
And then, so let's, we'll move on to a slightly more, hopefully, more positive answered question. Is it possible for us to become almost free of anxiety?
Oh, such a good question. So, I don't have a simple answer.
Life's always going to happen, isn't it, right? Like, you know, the more interest rates will go up and suddenly like you're pushed to your brink with your mortgage or something's going to happen.
Yeah. So we can really learn to master our anxiety, and that's learning the tricks of the mind, like knowing, okay, my mind's always going to tell me I've got to do more stuff. I'm not going to believe that right now. I'm not going to go with that right now. I'm going to step back from the mind. My mind's always going to criticize me on some level. I'm not going to do that right now. I'm going to fight back with some love, you know, like I'm going to tell myself I'm awesome and really back myself. But in terms of anxiety itself as an experience, it's a normal human experience that we will always have through our lives to some degree. It's normal to feel anxious when you have a deadline looming, or if you are, for example, presenting and you need to perform at a high level, you want a bit of anxiety because it helps you think usually. Ideally, it helps you think more clearly and articulate yourself. Or it's normal to have some anxiety if you had a near miss car incident, right? Like we wouldn't not want to have that response in our bodies because it does help us to be safe and it helps us to respond in an emergency situation. Granted, there will also be anxiety in moments where something is triggered, and there will always be triggers through our lifetime. We're always learning about ourselves. And I don't want people having this false idea of I haven't healed enough and like I've failed in some way because there's some anxiety. What we do is we get so much more graceful at managing it, at how we relate to anxiety, seeing it as a friend, seeing it as, oh, this little alarm bell telling me I need something. Thank you, anxiety. What do I need? Instead of, if we don't respond to anxiety that way and we try to ignore it, it snowballs into something bigger and becomes more and more of a bigger feeling. And it comes up more frequently too. So the more that we just invite anxiety in, we let it be there, we experience less of it and we experience less intensity of it most of the time. So that's my answer. It's not really possible to be free or to cure anxiety altogether. Certainly if you're living with crippling anxiety, you're getting daily panic attacks or weekly panic attacks, yeah, you can really come back from that 100%. But to expect that you will live in a Zen Buddhist monk enlightened way every day of every moment of your day, I certainly haven't managed it, but I see myself as mastering that anxiety, which is that ongoing process of, okay, it's here. How do I respond? How am I going to choose? And making the loving choice.
Yeah, beautiful. That sort of takes me back to a podcast I listened to. I think it was Brooke Costello a couple of years ago. She was talking about mindset. And I think we do as humans need to be really careful that we're not ultimately looking for a place to get to where there's going to be no negative thoughts and suddenly everything's going to be positive and we're going to be really happy and life's never going to be just humdrum happy, is it? And Brooke said in this episode, I don't know where this came from, if it was research, but her belief was that 50% of the thoughts that all of us have every day are negative. But it's what we do with the thoughts that come in, is, and that's what really counts. Our ability to notice it, reframe it, and see it for what it is.
Yeah. And so while we might never lose anxiety as a like a thing that can come and be present with us for moments of our life here and there, what we can lose is the layers of trauma and grief that we're hanging on to, the stored up negative emotions that really weigh us down. We can lose a lot of that, like, overwhelm of, I don't know what to do in this moment. What do I do? Oh my God, it's getting worse and worse and worse, and everything's just spiraling out of control. So there is a lot that we can lose. It's just that anxiety. I don't want to lose my anxiety. I want it here. It's got so much to teach me.
Yeah. We need to befriend it.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. So, Georgie, I'd love to talk to you about the anxiety reset method. Could you share a little bit about that with the listeners?
Yes. So this is my book based on my method, which is tying in that holistic approach, mind, body, and soul as well. When I say soul, I'm talking about seeing ourselves as more than just our mind, having a more conscious awareness of what we are and what life is all about, seeing that your thoughts are just a story of who you are, and that's not all that there is to you, and having that ability to kind of zoom out and question what life's all about. Taking into consideration our gut health, our hormones, our nutrition, all those pieces that build our physical resilience, while also examining the thoughts of our mind. So it's a 12-step process, or a 12-week process, that you can take it on your own, at your own pace. But I sort of set a timeline, a time frame, so that you can work through it and actually complete it and know that you've got it done. And this book is something that I just want to get this information into more hands and really empower people and get that message out there that we should be celebrating our rest, and anxiety is not here because there's something wrong with you. It's just something to listen to and ask those questions and have that conversation with yourself to dive deeper.
Wonderful. Congratulations again, Georgie, as well, for all three in your first book. So exciting. So at the time of launch of this episode, it'll be March 2023. The book hasn't quite launched. However, I'm right in saying that listeners can join an early bird list, which we'll put in the show notes.
There is a pre-order available. Order the book and it'll come out. So it's coming out on the 28th of March, so end of the month.
Okay, great. So we'll make sure the pre-order link is in the show notes. And then, of course, when the book is available, we will be singing that to the rooftops, because I have a feeling many in my audience would love to get their hands on this. So, Georgie, thank you so much for such a valuable and important conversation. I know that so many people are going to be so full of gratitude for some of your wisdom today, lots of your wisdom. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Amy, and I can't wait for you to read it.
Yes, no, neither can I. Bye.
Bye.
This was episode 52 of Woman, Conversations for the Curious. You'll find Georgie on Instagram at Georgie the Naturopath, and all further links to her work, book, and today's show notes over at theholisticingredient.com/52. As always, if you're enjoying the series and you've 2 minutes to leave a review on your favourite podcast app, I'd truly appreciate it. Until next time, stay curious.